Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 8, the character of Lord Maharaj. In the summary, although Lord Maharaj was very elevated, he fell down due to his attachment to a young deer. One day, after Bharat Maharaj had taken his bath as usual in the Rupa Gandaki and was chanting his mantra, he saw a pregnant deer come to the river to drink water. Suddenly, there could be heard the thundering roar of a lion, and the deer was so frightened that it immediately gave birth to its calf. It then crossed the river but died immediately thereafter. Maharaj Bharat took compassion upon the motherless calf, rescued it from the water, took it to his ashram and cared for it affectionately. He gradually became attached to this young deer and always thought of it affectionately. As he grew up, it became Maharaj Bharat's constant companion and he always took care of it. Gradually, he became so absorbed in thinking of this deer that his mind became agitated. As he became more attached to the deer, his devotional service slackened. Although he was able to give up his offering to the kingdom, he had become attached to the deer. Thus he fell down from his mystic yoga practice. Once when the deer was absent, Maharaj Bharat was so disturbed that he began to search for it. While searching and lamenting the deer's absence, Maharaj Bharat fell down and died. Because his mind was fully absorbed in thinking of the deer, he naturally took his next birth from the womb of the deer. However, because he was considerably advanced spiritually, he did not forget his past activities, even though he was in the body of the deer. He could understand how he had fallen down from his exalted position, and remembering this, he left his mother deer and again went to Kalaha Ashram. He finally ended his fruitive activities in the form of a deer, and when he died, he was released from the deer's body. So, you can see this aspects of this pastime with Bharat Maharaj, which yeah, I noticed that some devotees never quite understand how he managed to fall down from such an exalted position. There's almost an anxiety that we go along with devotees that one day we'll just fall down and disappear. Of course, the problem is we do see that that happens. So it's not unfounded, but the very nature of this pastime is so that it doesn't happen. So we read this pastime in the sense that, well, this won't happen to me. But the pastime is there so it doesn't happen to me. So we have to try and understand it, take this opportunity. And as I said, don't be like many devotees I've seen it after 20, 30 years, they're still, why did he fall down? Just, we have to understand that straight away. Now, we've got one verse up here. Yeah? We'll read that, and then there's not a lot of purports, but we'll read some of the past times. So we'll do this here. Shri Sukhuda Vacha.
Shri Sukhuda Vacha.
Ika, Ikaja tu Mahanajam, Vitabhishika Nayam Baba Sikyako.
Ikaja tu
Shri Sukha Uvacha. Shri Sukhadeva Goswami
said,
Ekada, once upon a time,
Two.
But.
Mahanagyam.
Mahanagyam.
In the great river known as Gandaki. Pita Abhishekha. Nayanika Arashakaha. Having taken a bath after finishing the daily external duties such as passing stool and urine and brushing the teeth. Brahma Aksharam. The Pranava Mantra form. Arigiranannaha.
Chanting.
Mahurta.
Mahurta
Trayam.
For 3 minutes.
Udaka Ante. On the bank of the river. Upa Vibesha. He sat down. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, "My dear King, one day after finishing his morning duties, evacuating, urinating, and bathing, Maharaj Bhava sat down on the bank of the river Gandaki for a few minutes and began chanting his mantra beginning with Omkara. The Chatadara Janakadini. Vasaya Javasaya Vyasam Ikarol Karajavagama." O King, while Bharat Maharaj was sitting on the bank of that river, a doe, being very thirsty, came there to drink. Tiyakabi Mana Udaki Kabat Viva Nibudina Naruto Vigyakate Nado Loka Vayankara Udapata. While the doe was drinking with great satisfaction, a lion was very close, roared very loudly. This was frightful to every living entity and was heard by the doe. Tam upasat cha sa vikha vadu vidhi vikrava smita nirikshana chuchuravati hari maha vidhisha. By nature, the doe was always afraid of being killed by others, and it was always looking about suspiciously. When it heard the lion's tumultuous roar, it became very agitated. Looking here and there with disturbed eyes, the doe, although it had not fully satisfied itself by drinking water, suddenly leaped across the river. The The doe was pregnant, and when it jumped out of fear, the baby deer fell from its womb into the flowing waters of the river. Before, there is every chance of a woman's having a miscarriage if she experiences some ecstatic emotion or is frightened. Pregnant women should therefore be spared all these external influences. Ta prasa ko sapna daya ki tatura sa ganina vi yujimana kashanti daryam krishna sarasati nipa tatata samamama. Being separated from its flock and distressed by its miscarriage, the black doe, having crossed the river, was very much distressed. Indeed, it fell down in a cave and died immediately. And this is the verse, the purport that we will comment on today, which is verse 7. Tam tena kunakam pipanam shutasanu yanam abhiriksha Kabidam Banho Ivanu Kampaya Rajishi Bharatadaya Vita Mataram Ityashama Buddha Manayat. The great king, Barak, while sitting on the bank of the river, saw the small deer, bereft of its mother, floating down the river. Seeing this, he felt great compassion. Like a sincere friend, he lifted the infant deer from the waves and, knowing it to be motherless, brought it to his ashram. Purported by Divine Grace, please see Dr. The laws of nature work in subtle ways unknown to us. Maharaj Bharat was a great king and very advanced in devotional service. He had almost reached the point of loving service to the Supreme Lord. But even from that platform, he could fall down onto the material platform. In the Bhagavad Gita, we are therefore warned, Yam hina yajnante ete purusham purushasana sama dukha sukham yeram samvittataya kalpate. A best among men, Arjun, the person who is not disturbed by happiness and distress and is steady in both, is certainly eligible for liberation. Bhagavad Gita 2.15. Spiritual salvation and liberation from material bondage must be worked out with great caution. Otherwise, a little discrepancy will cause one to fall down again into the material existence. And therefore we have that saying that spiritual life is like a razor edge. Little inattention. This blade is so sharp. But devotional service is very powerful. It's a very elevated platform. It's a very narrow path. You know, you've got to tread each step on the path. One path off, one foot off the path, down and there, just like that. Here, Bharat Maharaj was in the Kalikandaki River, which is in the Annapurna Ranges. You know, the very steep. That's where you get the showgrounds. And you know, you see the buses sometimes. Actually, you know, they generally have to fly up there, don't they? You know, quite often the devotees that want to get the showgrounds have to fly. But if there are cars that they drive on, in a bus or a jeep, you know, they just, I'm thinking just the traction of the wheel is just slightly off, and it doesn't even have to be a big accident. Just, you know, the wheel just is slightly off, and it just drags the power over. I don't know if you've ever had that experience. I've had that experience with one time I was coming back from Queensland, myself. Really good from the farm. Driving back from Queensland, we'd done a catering. So when I was managing the farm, I was doing all the catering. And that's how we maintained the farm, independent, financially managed the farm without taking money from God. And anyway, at one time we had done the concert, and at the end of the night, we were going to take something, perhaps come back and get the rest of the morning. But while we were in the tent at the end of the night, these drunken people started trying to destroy the tent and all our property. And they were literally taking running leaps at the tent. You know, so they were jumping into the canvas of the tent, like, about a dozen of them. And we thought, okay, if we leave, we'll come back and everything will be finished. So we decided we didn't actually have to, we had no choice. Tell them to get lost first, and then pack everything up, get it all into the trailer and a van, and which I had, and then into something to train Rupert's car, and then drive back for one go.
so that I had the band, because my family had actually sort of used the time. And when you fill them up and put a trailer on as well, a band, you know, they don't have much traction on the front wheels anymore. They're sort of, the van sort of slightly lifted up. And so we're driving home. As I was just going into Winchester, I looked up in the, I was about 8 years now, quite slowly. And I looked up in the sky, there was this cloud, and it was like a dark moon. The eye, the cloud looked like a dragon, and the eye, the moon was like the eye of the dragon. I looked at that and thought, something bad's going to happen. And it just looked like this evil dragon was about to destroy me. And so I slowed down to 60, although the speed was 100. So I slowed up to 60. Anyway, although I was going very slow, as I was driving, my front wheel just touched the side of the road, and it just touched the grass, and as soon as it touched it, it just dragged the whole van and trailer off the road. And just lost traction. Just touched that grass. It was hardly hidden, going very slow. And I sort of ended up, because what you do for those driving, in a vehicle and it goes in a direction you're not supposed to go, you go with it first. You don't. The worst thing to do, you're going that way, is to pull it back too hard, then you start wrong. So you actually got to go with it until you get a bit of traction, and then you go do yourself out. A very, very similar thing in the same van. We were at Dawn doing catering, and rock above the forge. I don't know if you've ever been there, but it's like a big hill sort of thing, and you go to park down the hill and a bit of it on the side. So again, I had this van filled with stuff, and as I came, I thought, these, they've all got four-wheel drives. I've just got this because I can't afford anything else. As I come down the hill, and I thought, when I turn, I've got this bit, I'm going to roll down the hill like that. And as I sort of turned to park, the van lifted up on two wheels and was about to roll over that way. So what I did again, I actually turned the wheel the way we were going to roll, and it stopped me. If I had to turn the other way, we'd lose traction. I didn't move, I just turned it, but it just bedded in enough for the van to fall back over. But the point is that, you know, sometimes it's just a little bit off the path, and just there's enough momentum that this is what happened to Barrett Barrage. It was a little deviation, but it took him a long way. Actually, I heard Kadamba Kanana, say it this way. He said, sometimes, you know, the road is 10 miles, and then she just slaps you down. But, she doesn't give you a chance. So anyway, this is the cautionary tale. That a little bit of attention, big problem. So base is it. So here, anyway, it says that as it will be revealed in later verses, Bharat Maharaj had to accept the body of a deer due to being overly compassionate for this infant deer. So he had to take a whole bird as an animal. That's a really messed up his schedule. We should be compassionate by raising one from the material platform to the spiritual platform. Otherwise, at any moment, our spiritual advancement may be spoiled, and we may fall down onto the material platform. Maharaj's compassion for the deer was the beginning of his falling into the material world. And again, this is another
anomaly that, you know, you want devotees to be compassionate, and yet his compassion was, as also Vishnu Chakrabarti the court points out, an obstacle to bhakti. So, therefore, we can see that compassion, even good qualities, if they're utilized in order to stay firmly on the path of Krishna consciousness, then that's okay. But as soon as you use the same, you know, materially good qualities, but in a material way, one that deviates us from the path, then that same quality will actually show us off the path. And so, you know, we see that in Bhagavad Gita, you see, with Arjuna, Bhagavad Gita 128, Arjuna said, "My dear Krishna, seeing my friends and relatives present before me in such a fighting spirit, I feel the limbs of my body quivering and my mouth drying up." So, Prabhupada then describing Arjuna's compassion in this particular instance as a transcendental quality. He says, "Any man who has genuine devotion to the Lord has all the good qualities which are found in godly persons or in the demigods, whereas a non-devotee, however advanced he may be in material qualifications or education and culture, lacks in godly qualities." So Arjuna, after seeing his kinsmen, friends and relatives on the battlefield, was at once overwhelmed by compassion for them who had so decided to fight amongst themselves. So his compassion for both sides. Prabhupada says, this overwhelmed a kind devotee like Arjuna. Although it is not mentioned here, still one can easily imagine that not only were Arjuna's bodily limbs quivering and his mouth drying up, but he was also crying out of compassion. Such symptoms in Arjuna were not due to weakness, but due to his soft-heartedness, a characteristic of a pure devotee of the Lord. And Prabhupada quotes Bhagavad Gita 5:13-12 that, you know, the pure devotee of the Lord has these qualities, all the good qualities, including compassion. So we have to be very careful in this verse here that devotees don't take the wrong idea that in the name of devotional service they should be callous to any divinity. So it's natural for a devotee to be compassionate. In fact, if they're actually to become a say qualified devotee, a good devotee, one should develop all good qualities, including compassion. But then we have to look at it from the other perspective, where that compassion can be directly applied, but if it's incorrectly applied, then it does become a weakness of the heart. And Prabhupada, and the Gita says that as well. So Arjuna has transcendental qualities, but if the qualities are misapplied, then they actually, due to the weakness of the heart, the same problem. And in that sense, then a devotee does have to be callous. So you see in the 6th chapter, it describes samadhi. The idea is to always be fixed in Krishna consciousness by executing one's duties, and one should be callous to anything which will disturb that. As in the case of Bharat Maharaj, he had to also practice to be callous to things which actually disturb one's duties, which help one to remain Krishna conscious. So there's that verse describing that state of samadhi. And in there, Prabhupada in his purport says, the devotee accepts the bare necessities of life, making the best use of a bad bargain, and enjoys transcendental happiness in Krishna consciousness. He is callous towards incidental occurrences, such as accidents, disease, scarcity, and even the death of a most dear relative, but he is always alert to execute his duties in Krishna consciousness or Bhakti Yoga. Accidents never deviate him from his duty. Prabhupada quotes here also Bhagavad Gita 2.14. So in this purport, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's quoted 2.15, which is, you know, just the same mood as 2.14, that Agama Panyan just comes to Tikshastra Bharata. He endures all such incidental occurrences because he knows that they come and go and do not affect his duties. In this way, he achieves the highest perfection in yoga. So, that verse that Srila Prabhupada has quoted, 2.14, and 2.15, that, O son of Kunti, the non-apparent appearance of happiness and distress, and the disappearance of due course, like the appearance and disappearance of winter and summer seasons, they arise from sense perception of a sign of Bharat, and one must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. So happiness and distress, they come because we have this body, and happiness and distress come to others because they have a material body, and if we identify with this body, then we are subject to the happiness and distress of the body. So then we have to transcend that by verse 15. O best among men, Arjuna, the person who is not disturbed by happiness and distress and is steady in both, is certainly eligible for liberation. So one has to not be disturbed by the happiness and distress. So in this way, as we just discussed, that things happen in this material world, and one has to be very alert to one's activities in Krishna consciousness and not let the disturbances of happiness and distress that affect us or others deviate us from executing our duties in Krishna consciousness or being Krishna conscious. And at the same time, a devotee who's in that situation always maintains the transcendental quality of compassion, but never misplaces it in such a way as to fall from the path of Krishna consciousness. So we see that, you know, very interesting situation. Prabhupada gives this example that on a battlefield, sometimes the medics go out the Red Cross, and they have to try and save people who have been shot, blown up, injured, bayoneted, what have you. And that's a very ghastly scene. So they get out there on the battlefield. Prabhupada says it's their duty. You know, they can't save everyone. they have limited resources, and they actually have to choose that I can't do anything for this person. Maybe a little palliative care, something. You know, it's a nice word, something. But you actually have to leave that person to go to someone you can save. So one may think that, you know, that's a lack of compassion, but actually, you know, we have this situation in the world now, even in, you know, England, because of the hospital situation being overwhelmed by the pandemic, that they're in a position now, the nurses, the doctors, they're in tears, they have the compassion, they're crying. We have to decide we don't have a bed for these people. Not everyone, we have beds for some. The ones that we give beds to may survive, and the ones that we don't give beds to may die. A very, very hard decision. But that doesn't mean that they don't have compassion. It means that sometimes. But if they make the wrong mistake, not only can they make the situation worse in that more people can die if they're not attentive, and if they're not careful, they can also die in the name of compassion. You know, these days you stop to, you know, say there's a car accident or something, you stop. You have to be very careful touching the blood from someone who might be trying to save their life. If you touch that blood, you know, and that blood infects you, you can get all sorts of you know, very severe lifelong illnesses or dead things. So out of compassion, there's sort of so much, and you actually have to be trained as well. You actually have to be very, very well trained. It's not a lack of compassion, but you know, these, so, you know, we can't make a show of compassion for the sake of it and disturb one's ability to do the duty and keep oneself protected, or you know, actually more people suffer because we're somehow doing something sentimental. And of course, more people suffer. In this, the Bhagavad Gita, this concept, you know, we are advised to be compassionate. Prabhupada mentions it here in this Bhagavad Gita. We should be compassionate by raising one from the material platform to the spiritual platform. So that's how we're compassionate. That's our general way of doing things. We try to help people to come from the material platform to the spiritual platform. We're not in the business of, because, you know, there's very few people in this world who know how to do that. So someone has to do it, and fortunately, Srila Prabhupada has established his song for that purpose. Otherwise, very few millions that know how to do that or will do that. We're not so much in the business that we're looking after the material needs of people one by one. You know, you take one person, you look after them, you know, put them up in your home, feed them, you know, pay all the rent. We're not in that sort of situation. Nor does it really help the situation in the world if anyone's doing that. So, in the Bhagavad Gita, definitely our business is to help. In Bhagavad Gita 5:25, it says that those who are beyond the dualities that arise from doubts, whose minds are engaged within, who are busy working for the welfare of all living beings, and who are free from all sins, achieve liberation and supreme. So the devotee understands, as mentioned in the purport, that every living entity is suffering because of their immemorial desire to avoid Krishna consciousness. Every living entity in this world is suffering because instead of cooperating with the Supreme Lord, who is literally maintaining us. They want to work competitively against the Supreme Lord, that I am the enjoyer of that. I am the provider, and the results of my work are for my enjoyment like that. So that's everything he's trying to do that. But actually, if we work cooperatively with that understanding, without a doubt at all, the real enjoyer is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the provider, and he is the enjoyer of all our works and the results of all our works. But because he's the supreme friend, he wants the results of all activities to be enjoyed by every living entity in cooperation with the Lord. So we're not, as Prabhupada says, we're not enjoyers, we're cooperators. I love this. We're not enjoyers, we don't think of it in that term, we're cooperators. If we cooperate with Krishna, we also enjoy. So it's because of that lack of Krishna consciousness, and devotees are fixed in that, they understand. That is the solution to all problems. That is the peace formula. You want peace from the misery of material existence? There's no other way. There's no second way. Anything else you do that doesn't include that, it will fail. It is a temporary solution. But in here, he says, you know, therefore to act to revive this consciousness within the entire human society is the highest welfare of all the world. One cannot be engaged in such first-class welfare without being liberated in the Supreme. A Krishna-conscious person has no doubt about the supremacy of Krishna. He has no doubt because he is completely free from all sins. This is the state of divine love. So on that platform of divine love for Krishna, one naturally sees that every living entity is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, and therefore because they're part and parcel of the Lord that they're developing the love for, and they know that Krishna has an intimate and loving relationship with each and every living entity, then the devotees try to please Krishna and help the living entity by helping them also provide that eternal relationship. But unless one is liberated, one can't do that. And as Prabhupada mentions that, it's the duty of the physician to keep himself fit and healthy. So around the world we see, you know, there are doctors and nurses putting their life on the line. But it is their duty to not get sick. Because if they do, they can't do their work. And to do that, they have to follow the rules and regulations of being untouched by the disease. There are strict rules and regulations, and they must do that, otherwise, if they get sick, they're finished, and so many people, if too many get sick, then of course the whole thing collapses. So, it is the duty, Krishna, you know, wants us. It's not a selfish desire to look after one's Krishna consciousness very carefully. If one is doing so for the sake of preaching Krishna consciousness. So, not in the mood of yogis who may not even understand Krishna consciousness is the solution, let alone want to preach it. We're not in that mood. That's Bhagavad Gita, verse 6. Verse 6:32. He is a perfect yogi who, by comparison to his own self, sees the true quality of all beings in both their happiness and distress. So So we know that it is only by Krishna consciousness that we can become happy, and that is the same for all others. He says, a devotee of the Lord always looks for the welfare of all living entities, and in this way he is factually a friend of everyone. He is the best yogi because he does not desire perfection in yoga for his personal benefit, but tries for others also. He does not envy his fellow living entities. Here is a contrast between a pure devotee of the Lord and a yogi interested only in his personal elevation. The yogi who has withdrawn to a secluded place in order to meditate perfectly may not be as perfect as the devotee who is trying his best to turn every man towards Krishna consciousness. So, you know, sometimes in the neophyte stage, where we do not understand how everything can be applied in Krishna consciousness, and we cannot differentiate, where sometimes we're attracted to mundane moral or religious principles, which in fact can be obstacles on the path of Krishna consciousness in the neophyte. So therefore, an artificial show of compassion would not be unusual for a neophyte in the name of repentance. Generally in this world, people like to demonstrate that they will look after so many, you know, unfortunate people or living entities. And in this way they advertise their spirituality or advancement. But as Rupa Goswami explains, if we don't follow the rules and regulations of scripture, you know, our show of spirituality just simply causes disturbance, which is very, very little value. And therefore, if we look at the world, you know, with all the social welfare programs, all the billions and billions of dollars that are pumped into philanthropic charity works, what do we see? We see that poverty is increasing, disease is increasing. You know, even in civilized countries, in America, England, you know, Australia, actually, you know, the gap between the very, very rich and, you know, those who are below the poverty line, I see in the statistics, you know, even in Australia, there's a significant amount of people increasing who, there's like four basic things that are considered that, you know, if you don't have one of those, but especially a few, you're in trouble, like a house to live in, you know, sufficient food, you know, a certain amount of money for paying bills, medical care, education. No, there's a few basic ones, and there's a huge percent increasing day by day that just don't make them. Those basic things, and they're considered to be below the poverty line. And that's increasing. That's despite the fact that they're pumping more and more money into, you know, these sort of charities every year than ever before. But one cannot override the laws of material nature. That if one commits sinful activity, there will be a karmic reaction. And one will have to go without certain things as a result of karmic reactions. So that is not an excuse to not show compassion, but we follow the Krishna consciousness process. And of course, our Krishna consciousness process is that we teach people how to become Krishna conscious. But we also distribute prasad food. We don't give charity foolishly. Say too much, but a lot of people, even now, a lot of people receive charity, and it's not going to food and, you know, that, it's going to good time. They're having a good time with a lot of the charity,
lot of taxpayers, and you know, the sentiment is there, and you know, yes, there's a lot of praise and so many things, but a lot of resources around the world going to people who are suffering in the difficult situations is being wasted. People are not actually, it's not being spent on the things that perhaps the people need. Therefore, during the COVID shutdown, people spent an extra couple of $1 billion on alcohol. Where they get the money? And then, of course, because of alcohol and so many different things, there's more domestic violence. Fix one problem, create another. Something goes on. Because of the domestic violence, you have to throw more money in to fix that problem. So, the material energy, and this is Arjun's problem. He said to Krishna, you know, I can't find any way to drive away this problem. And Bhagavad Gita 2.8. Arjun, the same problem that Arjun was in. So this Bhagavad Gita is meant for everyone, and we can Prabhupada says in the purport, so Bhagavad Gita 2.8, I can find no means to drive away this grief which is drying up my senses. I will not be able to dispel it, even if I win a prosperous, unrivaled kingdom on earth with sovereignty like the demigods in heaven. How much money would he have for charity if he had that amount of prosperity? Throw some money around, everything fixed. In the purport it says, although Arjuna was putting forward so many arguments based on knowledge of the principles of religion and moral codes, it appears that he was unable to solve his real problem without the help of the spiritual master, Lord Sri Krishna. He could understand that his so-called knowledge was useless in driving away his problems, which were drying up his whole existence. It was impossible for him to solve such complexities without the help of a spiritual master like Lord Krishna. Those who see, and Prabhupada goes on further, he says, if economic development and material comforts could drive away one's lamentations for family, social, national, or international inequities, then Arjuna would not have said that even an unrivaled kingdom on earth or the supremacy like that of the demigods and the heavenly planets will be able to drive away his lamentations. So, the general consensus around the world, there's poverty in this country, there's diseases in this country, gather billions of dollars, throw that money at the problem, and it's all gone. And we don't see that working. Therefore, why not take the alternative of Krishna consciousness? Therefore, the devotees, you know, by practical, you know, seeing what was happening there 70,000 years ago, the same thing is going on now, the same problem with the same foolish solutions, as long as they go on, the problems of resistance. So one has to remain spiritually strong, but if one's first duty, if one's not liberated, Prabhupada said, you cannot engage fully in preaching Krishna consciousness. You actually have to remain on the liberated platform, which means full Krishna consciousness, and never deviating from your prescribed duties in Krishna consciousness. Then you will be able to understand very clearly how Krishna can best use us as an instrument to get the maximum benefit for everyone in this world by using Krishna consciousness. Let's leave it there if anyone has any comments or questions on this.
So, for
Bharat Maharaj
to not have rescued the Devi Gaya.
Say that again.
For Bharat Maharaj to not have rescued the Gaya, it would not be selfish of him to be the right one.
don't have an issue with Thomas. The problem was he didn't take spiritual advice from his spiritual authorities. What do I do? If you're not sure, ask the spiritual master. Here's this deer, because he's on the spot, okay? Maybe he gets the deer and thinks, okay, I'll make sure it doesn't die. Then I'll ask my spiritual authorities how to deal with the situation. Spiritual authorities will understand that, okay, perhaps just, you know, do what you can, and then, you know, basically, you know, but don't deviate from your spiritual activity. So, but because he failed to properly take instruction from Shastra, that, you know, he deviated from what he has received from his own spiritual practices, so that's not recommended anywhere in scripture. There was some perplexity. What did Arjuna do when there was some perplexity, you know, of this with greater magnitude? Not just a deer. He turned to the spiritual master. And Krishna resolved that problem for him. So, these things are, you know, difficult, but the main point is here, yes, it's natural for devotees to be compassionate and take the first opportunity to help others and be compassionate, but don't do it at the expense of losing your spiritual life. And don't do it at the expense that, you know, like on the battlefield, that we spend so much time with one person because we're so compassionate to the first person we see, we may end up definitely not going to live. And all the people who could have lived, we neglect them. So we've actually done more harm. So, you know, we really have to take spiritual advice on these matters. So we're not advocating to be, you know, that devotees should be hard-hearted and callous and non-compassionate. In fact, we're advocating that they're the most compassionate, and they should be like that, to be the most compassionate person. But, you know, how anything is applied in the service of Krishna or becomes an obstacle is not always clear, and therefore don't act independently, that's all. That's really the point of don't act independently. Take the guidance from those who can guide them, because little slip.
I was trying to understand the concept of being a cooperator. You mentioned that because if we understand that we are not just cooperating, and I would be facing the next one to answer this question, it would be a safe strategy in the sense to remain based in the Krishna's project, Krishna's plan, Krishna's way of doing, and just a cooperator. So being active at the same time, but not the owner or not the controller, just a cooperator.
Yeah, a cooperator. So Arjuna was a cooperator. Krishna asked Arjuna, you'd be an instrument in my hand. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm cooperating with God, therefore everything will be done by God, because He's the actual doer. Actually, He is. He's the actual doer. But although He's the actual doer, He does through us. He uses us as an instrument. So, as an example, when I, you know, cut the children's hair, I still use scissors. Although I'm the doer, I still use an instrument. It'd be foolish to say, oh, I'm the doer, I'm going to cut the hair. It's not the scissors cutting the hair, they're incapable. They can't do it without me. So, no, I use the scissors. So, although Krishna is the doer, He allows us to do the work because He likes to glorify His devotee. When you set a diamond in a ring, so Krishna is like the diamond, You sit in the gold ring. The gold looks more beautiful, and the diamond looks more beautiful. And that both of them, the enjoyment increases. That's how we work with Krishna. But each plays a role. The diamond and the gold, they're different from each other, and yet they're set together and they complement each other. It's so beautiful. So the devotee and Krishna, when they're together, Krishna likes to beautify the glories of his devotee, and the devotee likes to beautify the glories of Krishna. And together they both shine brilliantly. And if the whole world does that, the whole world will very peaceful, be like Vaikuntha. But Arjuna, in cooperating with Krishna, he worked really hard. He had to be alert. So Krishna's right there with him, but he's not thinking, okay, I'm cooperating with God. I'll just take it easy for a bit, any arrows come at me or Krishna, Krishna take care of me with God. No. He was protecting Krishna. He was his driver. Krishna's protecting him. He's very alert. He's cooperating with God, but he's very alert as if God's not there. As Prabhupada said, Krishna never ever said to Arjuna, "Arjuna, you sit here on the chariot and smoke ganja and I will do it." That's not how we cooperate. Cooperate means that if we're going to be instruments, we keep ourselves, like a blade, very sharp. It's a good instrument. An instrument in the hands of a surgeon or the builder, they keep them, very, very sharp. Keep the wheel oiled. We keep, in Prabhupada use that analogy, we keep ourselves oiled. In one sense, we keep the machine in the body, well looked after, because we're supposed to be an instrument, so we have to look after our physical body to make it a really first class instrument. We don't want to use it, we don't want to be incapable of it. We want to do as much service as we can for Krishna for as long as we can, right to our last breath. Not that we get, we do 5 years of service, we've worn ourselves out, messed up our body, and then we just sort of struggle to do anything for the rest of our life. You have to look after the body so that you can do a massive amount at the end of your life. Look back, because I looked after my body. So many more posts that we show from now, so many more books from now, so many discussions like that. So be really very alert. And the there are many upheavals, there are many difficulties in family life, with friends, and so many things. We have to be attentive to that, if we see that there's a problem, we actually have to be very careful that it doesn't become such a problem that it affects our service. And if there's a problem that's beyond our control, and it is quite a significant problem, we still can't let that affect our service. So it's something, because then that's envy. So you have this situation. You get this in the workplace, sometimes you get it in the temple. You're doing your service and people are being jealous or envious of you. So what you do is you give up the service. Right? So we give the classic example. Making garments. Someone says, "All these flowers are for my garments." And someone else is thinking, "But I'm making good radishes and garments. I have no flowers. I don't." And I say, you shouldn't even be here. You don't even qualify. So you get that sort of thing. Not here, of course, but other places. Anyway, if the person gives up their service, then that's envy of Krishna. Another person's envy affects them, and they give up Krishna service. That's envy of Krishna. Of
Krishna gave the news again, all of them got the informed. So imagine a mother, she's you know, looking after a baby. Someone says to her, mother, you're a fit mother, you shouldn't even have children. So she puts the baby down and walks off. And the baby says, Krishna should never suffer. Krishna's service should never suffer. Here with Bhagavad Maharaj, Krishna's service. For the sake of the deer, oh, that's okay. Someone's attention to the deer, but only neglecting Krishna for his God. He can look after himself, he's God after all. But where's the love? See, the love, and it's held over by personal self-interest. Krishna doesn't need that service, but he's teaching us that if we cooperate with him in love, we become benefited. So we must always keep that love there, the loving service, and out of love, never let Krishna be the loser in any situation, whatever happens in our life or in this world.
Can we understand that attitude of effective cooperation in knowledge can be developed over the time? It is not something that every newcomer devotee we can expect to take that attitude.
So you're saying that not every newcomer devotee can expect to come to that platform? Actually, they can.
Okay.
Yeah. I found this movement. I've been given a written devotion that I joined. The devotee said, do this, I just did. I didn't know anything. So I can't move it without understanding. I don't know anything. I've read the books, but really how to practice it, live it, I really don't know anything. So the devotee said to me, do this, I did. The devotee said, listen, I listen. The devotee said, shut your mouth, or shut my mouth. Pretty simple. And so, what they're doing, I'm going to hear some Vedic chant Hare Krishna. Not that, it's Hare Krishna. Eat this prasadam, but I need that. We were so much in those days, at no stage were we out of the association of another body. We went out on Sankirtan. I've told this story before. You know, if we chanted our mouths, we chanted another bodies. Because usually these days we see the chanting. We said, with Bhagavan Maharaj lost his focus. Devotees chant, I sit in the courtyard, we go to the beach, Hari Bol, we're there, nice to see you, how are you going, the lockdown, it's all good, yeah. Oh, a bit of paper, pick up paper, chant. Where was the focus? But if you chant with another devotee, the devotee say, are you chanting or so sorry? So I remember one of the first times that I didn't chant in association bodies, but a rare event. And we had a bit of a park, we were in Sydney, and we had a bit of a park, and you know, so devotees would chant, sometimes you walk around the park with some devotees. So I just sort of wandered off by myself. So I came back and it was time for greeting the deities. And the devotees were like, what happened to you, young man? Where were you? So I went for a walk. Upon yourself. So it was a bit, you know, the devotee is awful. You know, that's, so if the devotees just follow the other devotees who are doing the right thing, then from day one, there's no reason why they can't do exactly what needs to be done. This is what I said is the problem about Maharaj. He didn't consult. Here we feel, and here, this devotee. One of the things that really strikes me about this whole, first one, Bhagavan Maharaj was happily on the level of love of God. Prabhupada's quoting back in year 215. You know, it's one of the basic foundations. That's what went wrong. You know, just, oh yeah, no, I'll pass that. I'm up to the, Gayatri Mantra, where I'm meditating on Lord Narayan in the sun, there's no difference, situated in the heart of past,
Bhagavad Gita 2.14, I'm now on some higher level. So these, the concept of just not even following the basic principles. So these days, devotees can be very independent, more independent, it's the way the movement is. As long as everyone is Krishna conscious, that's okay. The devotees can live miles away from the temple, they can work independently. If they're Krishna conscious, that's what we want. You want that. The devotees literally become Krishna conscious and are able to just work independently and even go out into the material energy and preach Krishna consciousness and not be tainted by the material energy, going to their offices, going to the factories, and not touch. You want that. But if they're being affected by the association within the factory and the offices, they have to, you know, communicate and discuss with the devotees how not to be affected. They have to take, not to feel that, oh yes, Lord, we're Bhagavad Gita, you know, I've read Srimad Bhagavatam, so why do I have to chat, why do I have to talk to the devotees? It's my own work, it's my factory, I've been there for 10 years. I have to talk to another devotee about that. And at the same time, you know, the devotee may be unable to chant the rounds, or when they're chanting the rounds, they're thinking troubles at work, or troubles here, or what have you. So we actually, if we keep association and follow that association, and here, even Maharaj, on the platform of almost Prabhupada, needed to discuss with another devotee about Bhagavad Gita 2.15.
That's quite an interesting point when you said the need for discussion. It's not just following what others are doing. If we want to do a sustainable, or if we want to develop a sustainable attitude, has to be that complemented aspect of discussing, cultivating, understanding, not just following what the others are doing.
If this can happen to Bharat Maharaj, such an exalted person, we should never be so proud to think that I'm beyond discussing my devotion, aspects of my devotional life with suitable devotees. If I feel, you know, that discussion is very helpful. And we should never feel, well, if I speak with such and such a devotee, they're going to be talking to me about that in a year. I want to be talking about Champu, and every kind of thought is this, and you know, the pastimes of Radha Krishna, so you know, I'm born on a high level. This devotee is talking about these verses from Gita, you know, so I'm also a pastime. As you see, there's a problem in that, isn't there? So, so be very, very careful. Never neglect the Bhagavad Gita. Actually, all the more advanced situations, realizations of Krishna consciousness, they don't remove, it's not that you, okay, push aside the previous realizations because now I've got higher ones, I've got something better. No, they rest on that foundation. If there's no foundation, you can go high, but it all comes. Okay. So, devotees should read Bhagavad Gita every day, for their entire life. And even if they do that, they'll, like, Sanjaya, if they read the Gita every day for the rest of their life, they'll just become more and more thrilled at every moment just by reading Gita, but to speak of other aspects. If one is not being thrilled at every moment by reading Gita, they definitely need to read it. And they need to hear it from the body who is being thrilled by hearing the Gita. Anyway, I believe there.